Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel section segment. What do we call it? Our panel.
The roundtable.
Thank you, panel. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's the 28th of October. Yeah. It's 12 minutes past 9 o'clock.
The best part of your day.
Right.
That's what we call it.
The best part of your day. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's the 28th of October. It's the roundtable panel, and we welcome you all. Let me welcome our panelists this morning, and then we'll get started. We have a lot to discuss. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. We saw Sam Waterston at the Mahewi with Yehuda Hanani last night, doing a masterful job. Unbelievably good.
Terrific. Quite a performance, and I know that was, well, I mean, you put those two together. How could it be? Going to be good, right?
Right.
Going to be great. Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson, is here. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Political consultant, Libby Post. Good morning.
Good morning.
And investigative journalist, Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Hello, all. Welcome to our program. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right, let us begin with the big story over the weekend. The president announced on Sunday that a daring American commando raid in Syria, this from the New York Times, culminated in the death of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State, after a five-year international manhunt, claiming a significant victory even as American forces are pulling out of the area. Mr. Trump said in an unusual morning nationally televised address from the White House, "Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead." Mr. Trump and Mr. al-Baghdadi said Mr. al-Baghdadi was chased to the end of an underground tunnel, quote, "whimpering and crying and screaming all the way as he was pursued by American military dogs. Accompanied by three children, Mr. al-Baghdadi then detonated a suicide vest, blowing himself and up himself and the children," according to the president. It was a very vivid description that the president gave during that address. "He died like a dog. He died like a coward," the president said. Mr. Trump nonetheless reveled in the moment, using boastful and provocative language, unlike the more solemn tone typically adopted by presidents in such moments. He repeated the word "whimpering" six times and made a point of repeatedly portraying Mr. al-Baghdadi as sick and depraved and his followers as losers and frightened puppies. What about dogs yesterday?
Yes. And I want to apologize to every dog out there for being maligned. "Died like a dog." What is that supposed to mean?
Well, and a dog is a special insult to Muslims. They do not like it. And actually, this is really small because it is a good thing that this horrible terrorist leader is gone and won't be hurting people. I do acknowledge that. And I do acknowledge the bravery of our troops because that's required too. But I do not think we have a true accounting. I suspect he died yelling "Ali Akbar." I don't think he was whimpering and screaming. That just does not fit with anything we've ever read about.
But how would he know?
And how would
he
know?
That's the thing.
Right?
Was he in the tunnel?
Right.
No.
And the three kids that he dragged with him, if that really happened, that would have been.
Is that true?
You know, that. It just. Don't believe it.
Alan, what do you think?
Well, from a political point of view, as we know, Trump is trying everything he can to get the spotlight off of the impeachment thing. And this will help a little. This will help a little bit, short range. I agree with what Rosemary just said. You know, it's important that he was caught. I was fascinated by the fact that he's still competing with Obama, weren't you guys?
Yeah.
I
mean, who got the bigger bad guy?
Jeez. It's all size thing for him.
It was unbelievable.
Many of the Republican commentators, Alan, were saying the same thing yesterday. This is a really good thing. And he managed still to put himself in the middle of controversy because of the weird way he announced it and talked about it. And
also that whole thing about the book, about writing about Bin Laden prior.
Not true at all,
but prior to 9/11 of saying that Bin Laden was essential to get because he was a threat to our country. So, and that was part of the narrative that,
correct,
to Alan's point about Obama. Yes.
But just to finish up, obviously, short term, this is going to help him. I don't have any doubt about it, because there are those people in the middle who see this as an accomplishment. And we are looking at the purples because they're the ones who are making the decision as to whether or not this guy gets reelected, you know, or not. And I'm sure they are, too. But at the same time all of this is going on, we have some other things we're going to be talking about today, like who has to testify.
So this is right. And that is going to be going on today. And we will obviously talk about that. But as far as where we are militarily now, Rosemary, what does this mean for this whole mission in Syria and whatever that is and the removal of troops and where we are now?
Well, you know, Trump was so busy, it seemed to me yesterday, being triumphal and self-congratulatory, that he failed to see the irony of this. This mission was accomplished in large part because of intelligence from the Kurds and by the fact that our troops were already in Syria. He has removed both of those things. He has alienated the Kurds and betrayed them, and he's pulling troops out not to come back home, which would be great, and all you peaceniks out there, that would be fabulous, but that's not what's happening. He's moving them into Saudi Arabia. And maybe Iraq,
protect the oil.
To protect oil.
It's all he's doing is he's protecting moneyed interests in the United States.
Yeah. He has taken
the Koch brothers and the Russians.
He has taken the one section of Syria that maybe was secure and safe, and he has destabilized that.
So why don't we talk about the Russians just for a minute then in all of this? It's fascinating. Apparently, he let the Russians know, although they deny that he let them know. He says he did, but he didn't let Nancy Pelosi know.
Correct.
According to NPR this morning, he tipped off the Russians because he had to, which I thought was an
odd
wording.
Why is
that? Well, they flew over. I actually give him a break on this because he did have to fly over Russian-controlled territory. That would have been a true disaster if Russians had been shooting at American troops, American planes.
Right.
But to not tell Nancy Pelosi, who has a 30-year record of keeping secrets, she was the head of the Intelligence Committee for decades, and managed to go to Afghanistan last week without letting anyone know about it. This was just a purely low-grade, low-class little dig in keeping with Trump's, pettiness.
Did he tell any other congressional?
He told Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
And he told, no, there was one. Oh, Burr. Richard Burr. Yeah. Both Republicans. Yeah. And they should have been told. And I don't know if Burr and Lindsey Graham consulted any of the Gang of Eight. They should have.
You know, but this is the typical obfuscation that he does. His administration is full of leaks. So he says he's not telling her because she'll leak it. You know, it's his typical modus operandi. And it's also the typical total disregard for what it means to be a president and what it means for protocol and how you're supposed to act and how information is supposed to be shared. It's a very autocratic.
I think Schiff said it best. The whole idea of alerting members of Congress is if something went wrong.
Right.
If the Russians had gotten involved, if there had been a disaster and you ended up with 50 men dead on the field in the middle of Syria, then what would have happened? And for congressmen to say, yes, we knew and understood why this was necessary, that gives you cover. So it's just reckless. Everything he does is just reckless.
But the other thing that's so interesting, Rosemary and everybody else, is what we see with the Russians. I mean, here he is. He is basically being extremely nice about the Russians. And yet the Russians, when asked about it, come back and they say, we don't really know. And that. So in other words, he's not getting anything back for his obsequiousness.
Who? Well, nothing public.
Lindsey Graham?
Nothing public, yeah.
Yeah, well, wow, nothing public is right.
I have my theories about what he's getting
we
in
all
exchange.
Have them.
Well, moving on that, were you going to say something, Sarah?
Yeah, well, it's just so deep in our psyche to question what happens now. I was thinking back to when Osama bin Laden, when it was announced that he had been captured. And my kids, who are both under 10, and we try not to talk about politics in front of them and sort of just field their questions, right? And let them
Wow, that's gotta be hard.
It's hard. But I think in this climate, I don't want them to grow up thinking
Being
that they
cynical.
Can't trust their government.
Right.
So, but they asked, they were asking about 9/11. They were asking about how many wars we won. We drove by an Army National Guard, and they had lots of questions about wars and why people fight. And it's so deep in our culture right now to question what the president does is that I explained that the war on terror is a different kind of war. and that this week something we had a big victory. And their response was, "I'm sure Donald Trump claimed that he won." They won the war.
I think you need to stop the rule of not talking politics with your kids. I think they get it right.
So we
maybe something to this whole osmosis
theory. Yeah, right.
But that's how deep it is. That elementary school kids are deeply cynical about.
Well, I think that's a lot better than kids who grew up before Vietnam, where you accepted everything the government said, because that didn't prove to be such a great idea either. There should be questioning. But Donald Trump doesn't even care. Like, over the next few weeks, you're going to see lots of details coming out, just as it did about the Osama bin Laden raid. And all of those were not complimentary. There were some bad things that came out. And that will happen now. But he doesn't care. He grabs the moment and uses it. Let us not forget that he sent out a tweet 9 o'clock at Saturday night saying, "Big news, something big happened. Don't go golfing. Be on hand here for this." And then he announced it in the middle of the morning shows. He owned the Sunday shows, which otherwise would have been all about the impeachment. Mm-hmm. So always with him, this is about media message and control, which was, you know, that was the discussion we had last week, Alan, about the demonstration by unhappy Republicans. It's all show. It's all theater.
Yeah, but the idea, I mean, you know, there are those people who want to give Lindsey Graham a little bit of a break. I'm not one of them. I consider him to really be a despicable character. You know, the idea that you would tell a guy like Graham what was happening and then have him sitting with you on the whole thing is really politicizing to a point which we really haven't seen before.
Well, okay. Lindsey Graham deserved to know he is head of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He is one of the Gang of Eight who should have been told. The real problem is that he picked the one guy most friendly to him.
Well, and it, as is typical with Lindsey Graham, it's about power and proximity to power.
Relevancy is the word he uses.
Relevancy, yeah. He's the guy in the room when it happens. Yeah.
And by the way, we're now being told that Bolton's aide, you know, this guy, is not going to testify today. We don't know what that means, but we're told it won't happen.
Well, it means he needs more time with his lawyers.
You know,
I think liberal hope in Bolton is really stupid and misleading. He is a imperial presidency guy. He is going, if he actually does, or any of his people end up testifying against Trump, it will be very begrudging and very limited.
I want to talk to Sarah for a moment, if you would.
I'll shut up then.
No, I would never ask you to do that. You're terrific.
No, you just say, "Oh, I'd like to talk to Sarah."
But no, about something else. About something else.
Get a coffee.
Okay.
I don't feel slighted at all.
And that is, no, because Sarah is the law school professor, and what is maybe at stake here is something we call judge shopping. Perhaps you could explain that to everybody, Sarah. What judge shopping is?
Well, a lot of times it's called forum shopping, but it has to do with filing suit in a location where you think you'll have a more favorable outcome based on prior rulings of the justices in that particular jurisdiction.
And you have and quite frequently you have a record to go on, whether they're Republican appointed, Democratic appointed. You know, whether you're going to get an even break from them. And you have choices. You can go to one or the other, right?
It depends on the claim, but yeah. Anytime somebody is looking at the forum, it usually means they're choosing between two different landscapes of decision makers.
So when it comes to this particular...
Wait. Why are you asking that, Alan?
Because
I
want to know. I have a theory that they knew that, look, this guy did not want to testify today, right? We know that. So so do you pick a judge who's going to give you a sympathetic ruling? This is one of the reasons I have such a complaint about the way this is all going. You know, we're supposed to have a judiciary which is independent, but all too frequently it is not. And we people go where they know they'll get the ruling that they want, like using a dummy.
So in this case, it would be for the
subpoena?
Yes, it's about the subpoena. It's about whether or not if they get subpoenaed, you shop for the judge that will say you don't invoke executive privilege. You do not have to go and testify. That's what this
And the
is
question
about.
Is if it got to the Supreme Court, which it won't because it's way down the line. But if it got to the Supreme Court, what would John Roberts, who, of course, everybody's pinning their hopes on, who is a huge fan of executive privilege, say?
And the so and I guess my confusion then is in the subpoenas, how is it going with the others who are indeed testifying? Are they getting a better? I mean, I would assume you would always go to the same person, wouldn't you, or go to the same court?
It really depends, and it depends on where you are and who has jurisdiction. So I don't know where the other challenges have been.
No, but Joe makes a very good point. And that is, if this guy wins on this, then an awful lot of other people are going to follow the same rule.
Follow suit. Right?
If they can challenge it in that same jurisdiction.
If they don't want it. In other words, there are some people who want to testify and would love to be told to testify. There are some who just don't want to, either because of what they've done personally or because they don't want to lose their jobs.
We have to remember, too, though, that in every federal district, there are several judges in each location.
Right.
And so there's also, not to get too far into the weeds, but since you called on the law professor, there's also internal docketing procedures. And I would imagine that there may be some conflicts of interest with enough people challenging their subpoenas, depending on what type of information they have and what types of privileges are invoked. So it could get really interesting. I'll just put it
Well, that's great. So what's internal docketing?
All federal courts have their own docketing procedures. We don't get to know about them in too much detail.
Docketing means who gets what?
Which judge gets what?
In
which
the order.
Case? Yep.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have a lot to talk about. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post are here. Panel at WAMC.org is the telephone or is the address. Panel at WAMC.org. Right. Don't do that. We'll be right back. All right, we have letters. Let's go to those and begin with Christine, who says, I hoped you wouldn't quote his despicable words. This is President Trump's words. This is an awful man like all terrorists. However, we don't need to hear 45s over and over. His words failed and turned my stomach. Compare how his nemesis Obama addressed the nation after bin Laden was killed. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think you could not say what the president said on a major military maneuver, right?
Well, I think he has absolutely no class and no...
Yeah, but you can't not report it.
...sense of decorum. Oh, sure, you have to report what he said, but he has no sense of decorum in terms of, you know, what it means to be president. So that's why it was all about him. Everything is all about him.
So. Let's see. Carolyn has 3 points she wants to make. Raid was planned, but became rushed. As a result, riskier for U.S. lives because of Trump's pullout. 2, Russia Defense Ministry called into doubt Trump's claims of notice to Russia regarding the flyover, etc. On the other hand, Kremlin gave Trump kudos. 3, analysts report that while al-Baghdadi was malicious, his death is largely symbolic because he had not been active or effective in leadership of ISIS for the past 4 years because he has been so isolated. So symbolically, 1 point, but strategically and safety for the world is a big 0. ISIS is still made stronger by Trump's rashness and betrayal, says Carolyn.
By the way, there's a lot of, if that letter is correct, there's a lot of different reporting on those very issues. I read one report that the Russians had been ho-hum and not at all interested, you know, in what had happened and not at all supportive. And in fact, questioned whether or not they had been in on it. So that, again, you know, you got to read an awful lot of news in order to get the straight of it.
Absolutely. William writes, good morning. 45 has his base so worked up over Schiff, Pelosi, and the Free Press that killing a Muslim terrorist is barely a blip on the radar. He was booed at the World Series, and the crowd chanted, lock him up loudly. The sword of ignorance and short attention spans cuts both ways. Who will get zero mileage from killing Baghdadi?
It's terrible that we get satisfaction from that. It's terrible, and yet I did have a little stab of glee.
Well, of course, but Rosemary, every mayor who whoever goes to a game, every president gets booed. They all get booed.
nobody says lock them up.
No, I think the lock him up is terrific.
Yes.
I mean, because he deserves it. He started it, and he got it in spades right back.
I think
back,
bringing banners was helpful. That's always good. Yeah. None of them made it the television coverage, but that's another story.
Yes. Right.
Mark says, I don't think Trump does his clown show to distract from impeachment. Rather, I think he wants to be under fire to get his base riled up. Look at the World Series appearance in D.C. and getting booed. He does this on purpose. He loves the impeachment because he's top of the fold news every day. Thanks for keeping the light on. That's Mark's opinion. We go to...
Wait. I just don't agree with that. I don't agree that he's not concerned about this impeachment. That may have been in the beginning, but I think he's very concerned. And I think a great deal of what they're doing is to divert attention from the substance of the impeachment.
Well, he's brought back, or maybe he came on his own, Steve Bannon is back to help him now. Mm-hmm. And Lindsey Graham has been after him to take this seriously. You're in trouble. So he is getting the message.
What about John Kelly telling him, it was reported over the weekend.
Oh, you're wrong. The president said he never said that, John.
Okay. As I said, John Kelly is reported according to John Kelly, he said on his way out, he said to him, you cannot put a yes man in that job or you will end up impeached.
Well, whatever that's question, worth. There's no question he's going to end up impeached. Whether he's going to end up convicted is another whole story.
Well, but Trump did listen. He put a yes woman in that position who said that John Kelly just didn't have the wherewithal to deal with the genius who is our president.
Oh, that's Kellyanne Conway.
No. Shirley, what's her name? The non-press assistant.
Okay.
What if Pelosi, asks Kevin, what if Pelosi tells the world Lindsey Graham told her about the raid ahead of time?
Say that again.
Read the letter again, Joe.
All right, I will. Hold on. Pelosi tells the world Lindsey Graham told her about the raid ahead of time?
I think that's saying
she would have not been truthful in saying that she knew?
Right.
That she didn't know?
Right.
I don't understand, but okay. All right.
Well, but he's already
that's what Lindsey Graham already, should have done.
But he's confirmed he didn't tell her. He said that, right?
Yeah, I don't get the letter.
Well,
yeah.
That Trump didn't tell her. I don't know about Lindsey Graham. I guess I think we had said. I think you made the point, Rosemary. We don't know if anyone else would have told her.
Yeah,
but they should have.
They
right?
should have. Yeah, Lindsey Graham should have called her and said, "Hey."
Donald Trump's victory dance over the death of Baghdadi and his seeming belief that with the head of ISIS gone, that the war on terror is all but won. Donald does not realize you don't kill an idea or an ideology with military force. The British didn't learn it against the colonists. The French didn't learn it in Algeria. The Americans didn't learn it in Vietnam. You defeat an idea with a better idea. So far, Donald, who seems disinterested in history, has not seemed to learn that lesson.
But that's not what it's about. It's not about the defeat of the idea. It's about what he can do with his base. It's about what he can put out there in this impeachment climate to say, I did something specific that I want to get credit for. And he is getting credit for it, by the way.
Let's go to another letter, and we go to Wilbur, who says, Baghdadi responsible for killing hundreds of thousands of people. Trump portrayed by the media as being disrespectful toward Baghdadi. If your children were part of the mission, would you have wanted Trump to inform Pelosi and risk her leaking it to the media, risk having the mission aborted or having it fail, and blame Trump?
And so do we know that by giving it to the Republican allies that they weren't going to leak it? You understand what I'm saying?
I absolutely understand what you're saying.
Everybody who's in this conversation has taken an oath and has sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States, which includes supporting our troops. There's no way Nancy Pelosi would have leaked this information.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, she's a seasoned person. She's been doing this for a very long time. She knows the rights and the wrongs. She knows protocol. She understands national security.
I think the bigger problem is Trump tweeting out the night before.
Yeah.
Tune in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows what an impact that could have had and will have on future operations. And also, we don't know, because we're not in the intelligence community, the relevance of him putting the Kurds out there in his speech, the relevance of him releasing too much detail about what happened. It's just the fact that we would focus on this non-issue of Pelosi, who didn't know.
They already, our enemies know where that raid originated, because he described the time it took and flying, or blah, 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 all the detail he gave.
Who
they
else
were
was involved?
They were originally, it had to be an Iraqi base. So, you know, he's just reckless.
He is. That's exactly it. He's reckless and egomaniacal and narcissist. I mean, it's all about him. Tune in. You know, he's controlling this. One might think that he breached national security protocol.
So this weekend, I had a conversation with one of our listeners. Yes, James, I'm talking about you, who is a supporter, to say, how can you still be with him of Trump 3 years down the road after all this? Name 10 things, the good things he's done. Would you like to hear what's on this list? I spotted him, criminal justice reform and bringing back some political prisoners, and some you'll recognize. Continuing economic recovery, Justice Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, balancing the courts after 40 years of liberal influence, peaceful relations with North Korea, big change from the last two administrations, support for reform in Venezuela, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, pulling out of the one-sided Paris Accord, pulling out of the toothless Iran deal, building parts of the wall on the southern border to deter illegal immigration, reducing unnecessary regulations, helping businesses to thrive, using public platform to stimulate Americans to love the country, honoring first responders in the military. And there's more, but I found this really interesting. Adjusting U.S. military policing force worldwide, and so forth.
And many of those, if anything, many of those are obviously the talking points and are on the list, right? They're the greatest hits.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's what I asked him for, because we keep hearing, oh, yeah, Trump's a scumbag. That's the way my cousin put it. But he still does good things.
What's the platform for 2020?
Yeah. I think my favorite I didn't mention was phase one tax reform to stimulate business, which is in preparation for further phase two tax cuts in the second term, which will assist the middle class. So it's kind of, I mean, I read the list in despair, because almost every one of these, I would say, whoa, that's an accomplishment.
Wow. They're Fox News talking points.
To say nothing of the debt that's cut.
Yeah, right, there's nothing about that here, you know. Reducing unnecessary regulations, helping business, imposing temporary tariffs to change the balance of payments with fiscal enemies such as China. He uses strong arm negotiation skills to change the international landscape more favorable to peace, not war, developing diplomatic and economic detente with Russia and China.
Look at you doing homework over the weekend.
Wow. I've wanted this for a long time. We've talked about it here, because we're blinded by our liberal bias, you know, that we can't see all the good he's doing.
Jill, one letter before we go. Jill, and I don't know the answer to this. I was looking it up, but perhaps someone on the panel does. And if not, I'll try to get an answer before the end of the program. But Jill says, is my recollection faulty, or wasn't Obama's raid on bin Laden also done in secret? I'm a huge Obama supporter, but yeah. I don't recall him telling Congress in advance either. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong. He notified the people who had to be notified. It was done, his people say, as a courtesy. It is not required by law, but it's the usual procedure.
All right. With that, we will take a break. We will come back. We'll continue and move on to other stories. We'll be right back after this. You did the homework for us. What was the answer?
It says that before the 2011 raid in Pakistan that killed Osama bin Laden, the Obama administration gave advance word to the top two Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate, and the four leaders of the Congressional Intelligence Committees.
All right. So that for Jan, who wrote that letter earlier. Let's go to this story. We were talking about this earlier, but we'll dive a little deeper about going into the investigation and the Trump impeachment inquiry. the message that John Bolton, President Trump's former national security advisor, sent supporters of his newly reopened Political Action Committee last week raised as many questions as it answered. In a Capitol consumed by impeachment, Mr. Bolton implicitly criticized Mr. Trump's foreign policy, declaring that despite all the friendly notes and photo ops, North Korea isn't our friend and never will be. But he also wrote that the nation's security is under attack from within, citing radicalized Democrats. The conflicting signals were maddening after either resigning or being fired last month, depending on whose version is to be believed. Is Mr. Bolton so estranged from Mr. Trump that he might provide damaging testimony to House investigators? Or does he share the president's view of out-of-control Democrats pursuing an illegitimate impeachment out of partisan excess? The question is more than academic. As the House inquiry enters its second month, there may be no one in Washington that investigators want to question more than Mr. Bolton. His name has come up repeatedly in testimony that has depicted him resisting Mr. Trump's Ukraine pressure campaign and warning Rudolph Giuliani that the president's personal lawyer, that he was a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up.
I think that's a great metaphor.
Well, the answer is it could be, as you suggested, or as the article suggested, could be both. I mean, in other words, he could say this guy's very dangerous, and at the same time, keep up his attack on the radical Democrats.
So, as we mentioned, that an associate of Mr. Bolton, who was to testify today, has refused to testify. So it may now take longer for investigators to find out. He does share a lawyer with his former deputy and longtime ally, Charles Kupperman, who went to court on Friday to ask a judge to decide whether he should obey a House subpoena or a White House order to not testify. Mr. Bolton presumably might follow the same course. If and when he does testify, Mr. Bolton appears positioned to answer fundamental questions surrounding the events that have led the president to the edge of impeachment. As the National Security Advisor, Mr. Bolton was charged with managing the government's foreign policy apparatus. Yet Mr. Trump and Mr. Giuliani worked around Mr. Bolton to try to pressure Ukraine to investigate Democrats. At the same time, the president froze $391 million in American assistance to the former Soviet Republic. My question is, what would he possibly say that is different than what we already know?
I'm not sure that they're looking for different. They're looking for corroborating.
No. He may know stuff that we don't know. We just don't know what we don't know, right? And by the way, the interesting thing about Bolton is that there were reports that he was considering running for president himself, which gives you a perspective on who he is, you know, and what he thinks of himself.
True.
Well, undoubtedly, he thinks very highly of himself. I mean, if you've been invited to work for three other presidents, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have a great record. He's been swimming around in this ego cesspool of Washington, D.C. exactly. for a very long time.
Yeah, we just don't like his policies, but he's not a stupid guy.
No.
A Yale-trained lawyer, he brought years of experience when Mr. Trump made him his third national security advisor in March of 2018. He served in both the Justice Department, where he headed the Civil Division under President Reagan, and the State Department, where he was an Assistant Secretary of State under the first President George Bush, and an Undersecretary of State and Ambassador to the United Nations under the second Mr. Bush.
Yeah, I think his biggest beef with Trump was that Trump treated him with too little respect. He thinks he's deserved more. And that's when the fights got out of hand. So now the temptation is to think we called him, you did, Alan Bolton scorned. But I don't think, I do not think that we are going to, I don't think anybody's going to get a lot out of him that's going to hurt Trump, because his, like Barr, he has spent a lifetime building up the power of the presidency. He does not want that hurt, which Trump would badly do if he goes down.
Senator Lindsey Graham says, I don't care what Bolton says. He dismisses the idea that Mr. Bolton could hurt Mr. Trump in any way. He said this.
Well, what that means,
Fox
of course,
News
is
on
that,
Friday, yes.
It means I'll protect you, Mr. President. Ooh, let me lay myself down.
What that means is they think he will say something. I mean, why would Lindsey Graham say something like that if they weren't afraid of him?
The Ukrainians did not know the president had held up their ad when he was pressing them to investigate Democrats. Mr. Graham said there is no impeachable offense. You can't have a crime unless you have a victim. There is no victim here.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just perfect posturing. I mean, it's what Lindsey Graham does best. He's just heading, like you said, he's hedging hedging his bets,
yep.
hedging the president's bets,
absolutely,
bracing for impact, starting the message machine early. It's consistent with their entire approach.
Do you remember when he began yelling angrily at the Kavanaugh hearing, even though it had been conducted all according to, mm-hmm. to plan and politely, and he just had this fit of outrage and then followed by Kavanaugh himself? It's theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. Anything on that? We'll move on. Hearing no more, we'll go to letters. We go to this one who says, in Trump's rambling statement yesterday, one thing that stood out for me was him saying that we are protecting the oil for the Kurds, but that we deserve a share of it.
He's a privateer. I mean, he's been saying go after the oil from Iraq on.
This is also doing Putin's bidding. I mean, let's be real here. Putin is all about gas, oil, natural gas, you know, energy, all of this stuff, as well as the incredible moneyed interests in the United States.
Yes.
Half the Koch brothers is dead, but the other half is still alive and still wants fossil fuels. So, as do many of the higher echelons in that, you know, I see it in my head. They're all sort of floating around Trump, whispering in his ears, mm-hmm. telling him what to do so that they can line their pockets.
And I keep thinking, like, what's the recruitment strategy for our military then? You know, join our armed forces,
right.
fight with your brothers and sisters to preserve American oil interests, and maybe Russian. I mean, that's not what our
sons
and daughters.
We want you to
die
for
be.
Oil.
This is what it'll be. Protect our way of life. That's how they'll say it. Because fossil fuel is still our way of life.
And go to one of the
communications major here.
For one of the most destabilized regions now in the world.
And he created this instability.
Right.
Letter from Naomi, who says, Rosemary, wow, I've met your cousin over and over. They are people who look through crooked glasses that sidestep the truth and reality, common sense, and even the Constitution. That wasn't your cousin who wrote you that note.
No, it was from one of our listeners, James.
Okay. Then we go on. Your cousins may vary. Roger says, panel, I love you guys. I really do.
But
we need to take a look at the real data. Household media median income, Bush, $400 over 8 years. Obama, $700 over 8 years.
You mean the increase?
Trump, household median income. Trump, $5,000 over 2.5 years.
That's not true.
That just can't
be right.
That's
just not true.
Right.
You know, my tax, I do my own payroll, right? My difference in my federal tax is like $5. $5. I'm like, keep the, you know, 52, so whatever that is. Keep it, do it, give it to healthcare. It's simply not true. Nobody's swimming in cash. The middle class is suffering. You need to, if you are getting paid minimum wage, you need to work 2 to 3 jobs just to be able to get by.
Well,
and then there's the question of inflation.
I need some research.
Right.
I don't know what they're talking about. Median income.
I'm going to pass it on to Aaron Pacitti, who will join us
Aaron,
on Friday.
That would be a good one for him to look at.
Give him
what
some
does that really mean? Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool.
All right. And Mary says, this is, what if the raid was another example of quid pro quo that goes like this? A couple of weeks ago, Turkey and Putin offers to help Trump get al-Baghdadi if Trump agrees to abandon the Kurds and leave the border of Syria. The whole poll out was strange. What was Trump offered in exchange for leaving?
I thought about that myself, but the reporting is that the Pentagon has been planning this for months, and indeed a raid like this does not happen in just a few weeks. It had to have been months, and that they speeded up things when Trump made his surprise pullout. So I'm not sure that's true, but I can see why you think it.
All right. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We, so on this Bolton question that we were talking about, we don't have a time frame. So who do you think we hear from next? And you got to wonder what this week's going to bring.
I think it's just incredible that three branches of government, which are supposed to be watching each other, have now been affected the way that they have. You know, I'm very depressed about this because I think they may have found the right judge. The judge may say you don't have to do it because of executive privilege, because of presidential, you know, power. And if that happens, I think this country will have gone a long way towards the road to hell.
Well, Joe Biden said it very well last night on 60 Minutes. He said 4 years of Trump changing the presidency, the country can get back on track. Another 4 years, so 8 years of Trump, means a generational shift. Mm. And it will take generations for us to get back on track as to where we are in terms of believing in democracy. I mean, you know, it took Nazi Germany a long time to get over Hitler. It took Italy, I don't know if they're still over Mussolini, because their government is so constantly in turmoil.
Mm-hmm. You know, the right just won a big election.
Right, right. So, I mean, look at what dictatorships have done to countries that considered themselves democracies before they came in.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Shartak is here, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Sarah Rogerson. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to some of those in a few minutes. Panel at WAMC.org. Still a week before Election Day, and obviously some states have had this for a long time, but New York finally able to cast their votes at early polling sites for the first time, a move that supporters say will increase turnout and alter campaign strategy. State lawmakers enacted early voting in their last legislative session, delivering a victory to open government advocates such as Common Cause, who have long pushed for the change. The law requires counties to establish one early polling place for every 50,000 registered voters, with a maximum of 7. Some counties have exceeded this requirement. While there are 9 days of early voting, ending on Sunday, November 3rd, 2 days before Election Day.
Well, I'm really glad that it's working. I was a little dubious at first, not because I didn't support it, but because there hasn't been a lot of promotion. I mean, the governor sent out a press release yesterday, I think it was yesterday, with a public awareness campaign that they're doing, which is great. I think it maybe could have started a day or two before. However, you know, in according to the TU, 2,800 people in the Capital Region have voted, and it just started Saturday. And so, you know, that means people are going to take advantage of it. Albany County was almost 1,100 people, Schenectady 716, Saratoga 644, and not surprisingly at all, Rensselaer County is bringing up the bottom with 362 people voting, because their early voting places, their polling places, are in the suburbs of Rensselaer County. They are not in the city of Troy, where it's really needed. And there was a lot of conversation. There were TU articles about this, and the Board of Elections stuck to their guns. They're basically doing voter suppression of those folks, the poor people of color, who live in the city of Troy.
Wow.
I mean, Alan, you were talking not about that specific issue, but during your commentary this morning about that obviously this has been a Republican thing for a long time to try to keep people not voting.
That it is ironic, or maybe ironic is probably the wrong word. It is interesting that when the New York State Legislature, both houses go Democratic and a Democratic governor, that you find this. Republicans have inevitably opposed things that expand the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason they do that is because more Democrats don't vote than Republicans who don't vote. If you make it easier for somebody who's flipping hamburgers for $9 an hour or $5 an hour, whatever it is, to go and vote, that's going to help the Democrats. They know it, and that's why they oppose it. So what I'm confused about is if it's one for every 50,000, as your example, Libby and Troy, then it's not really fair, because there are some people who can't get to those spots. So that's got to be fixed also.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, people raise the issues in Troy. that this was patently unfair, and the Board of Elections stuck to their guns. And so it's going to take a lawsuit, I think, for next year.
So in other words, you cannot vote at the County Board of Elections in Rensselaer County?
No, it doesn't. It seems not. It seems they had two places, both out in the suburbs. But Sarah's going to check. I mean, if they can vote at the Board of Elections, then this would never have come up as an issue because the Board of Elections, the county building, is right in the city.
Right downtown. Right. Yeah.
Well, and let's not forget there's another lawsuit pending. I can't speak too much about it. But what's been made public is Rensselaer County Board of Elections saying that they're going to release voter registration information to ICE.
Right.
Which...
Well, but the thing is this, with the releasing that voter registration information, voter registration is public information. You can get it. So what is it that...
Well, under the National Voter Registration Act, actually, it's not all of it is public information. And there are certain procedures that one has to go through in order to get the level of detail that they're talking about automatically sharing with ICE.
Which is what?
Well, I have to go back and read.
Okay, fine.
But the,
another conversation for another day.
Homework.
But the important thing to note there is that it's not really about what information the law protects, but the impact that it has on people availing themselves of voter registration mechanisms. Yeah. Right. It's not the intent of the law that matters, as crazy as that sounds, and as explicit as they were about their intent. The important part is, protecting the franchise and what people do impacts the ability of individuals to feel safe doing one of the things that this country was founded on.
Voting.
Most importantly.
Right. Let's go to some letters.
I think we all just need to listen to the Hamilton soundtrack over and over and over again.
Stir, mix, enjoy, do as it says.
Yes.
Roger writes, Trump's announcement yesterday was pathetic, taking all the credit, unnecessary elaboration on how... it was dying like a dog, and his explanation of details making various advisors on national security, defense, and other associated agencies cringe as he bordered on revealing what should be secret. This all proves his nearly complete ignorance on such national security and foreign policy issues. Chuck says, with the constant lawlessness of the Republicans, why don't the Democrats follow each of these instances of withholding documents and refusing to appear when subpoenaed through the courts? I understand their focused approach, but they should be able to appoint people to follow up in the courts on these violations to show the American people that they stand up for the law and ensure that future administrations see that there are consequences for their actions. Anybody want to say anything on that?
No, but just to go back to the early voting thing, it's Skodak and Brunswick.
In Rensselaer County.
Skodak, those are the only two.
Right. Those are the only two. Skodak is out off of exit 11 on 90 going east. And Brunswick is off of Route 2.
And 7.
And let me just say that by and large, you need money to be able to live out in those areas.
And to travel and to get to the suburbs. I mean, it wouldn't be in the city of what you would expect.
And
it
public
to be.
Transportation loops.
Correct. Right. Trump's Roger. I read that. I apologize. This one from Dorothy. The excuse that Trump gave about not telling Pelosi about the raid is so lame. She is not the kind of person who would leak anything like this. It just goes along with what a narcissistic fool he is. Lock him up. We go then to Lyle, who says, hey, whatever happened to the border crisis with Mexico?
Where's those caravans?
Where's that fence?
There's still an emergency on the books,
it's
right?
It's actually getting worse. It's a humanitarian crisis at this point. People are dying. People are being disappeared. Families are still being torn apart. Children are still being held in facilities all across this country.
Outrageous.
It hasn't
5,200 was the latest count that I saw.
It's gotten worse. And because of the migration protection protocols, the MPP, there is now a thriving human trafficking network on the Mexico side of the border. And there's very little that Mexico can do to stop it.
Alan?
Yeah, I think that the point here is that that Trump makes up a crisis, goes with it for a while. If it's working for him, he stays with it. Sarah's absolutely right. There's a crisis. But that's not what he's concerned with. He's concerned with what goes to the base. And he's been doing that all along. So the letter writer is profound in what he or she is saying, because I forget what the gender was, because this is just another example of what he does.
Lisa writes to us and says, why can't the Dems hold those who refuse to testify in contempt? Jim Jordan needs to ask Santa for a suit jacket, by the way.
They can hold him in contempt, but they are holding back their weapons.
Okay, but when they hold him in contempt, Rosemary, or Lawyer Sarah, when they hold them back in contempt, what's the ultimate sanction? It has been said there's no longer a jail in the Capitol.
I defer to Rosemary.
Oh. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think that's why they're delaying it. And I think it is a political, not a legal question. So I will take the ball here. They would have to arrest them. They would have to have a jail. And that, I do not think, is an optic that the Democrats want, at least at this point.
Well, now
because
we have...
Because the Justice Department ain't going to do anything. Well, that's for sure.
We have Schiff saying that defiance of a subpoena is further evidence of White House obstruction of Congress. So
they're writing an article of impeachment.
That's right.
That's how they're going to handle it.
Yeah.
Why take a bishop when you can take the queen?
There you go.
Oh, chess.
Like that. Nice metaphor.
Very nice. All right. Lisa, I hope you're talking about chess.
I think so.
But also Kupferman, Kupferman, the guy who won't testify.
Yes.
Issue here is, I don't know whether I should or shouldn't. It's a poor old me. But now it's pretty plain that he just doesn't want to do it.
Can we talk about Katie Hill?
Mm. Yeah.
Of course.
No? You don't like that?
Yeah, no.
No, that was
no,
Alan.
No. Who is Katie Hill?
Oh, no. Well, Katie Hill was a
no,
member.
No, I know who it is. There's an old bluegrass song.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
I give the background. That's your job, Al.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Your job is to hijack it. My job is to give the...
Right.
I got it. So Katie Hill is a member of Congress. She was brought up on... it was brought up maybe, about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that she was having inappropriate relations with a member of her staff. there were... was it one or two staff members? I think it may have been...
Okay. Well, she was
the ultimate question was there a threesome involved?
Well, there
that's
was.
Your,
that,
that's not. Your ultimate question, Alan.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No,
well,
it was in
it
paper.
Was. I mean, it was. And that she said, oh, yeah, okay, so forget about it. Yes, that's true. That was with a campaign worker. And then supposedly she was having an affair with a staffer.
Right.
And she has steadfastly denied that.
So a
As
Democrat
if a
from
threesome
California.
Is okay, but that isn't.
Announced her resignation on Sunday after a string of reports shining a negative light on her personal life, including a reported affair with her legislative director that sparked a House Ethics Committee investigation. You wanted to talk about this. Why?
Because at a time when Democrats need gravitas and solidarity, she's now out of Congress.
Above and beyond that, the duplicity of this.
Yes.
Men who do this, and they do it routinely, male elected officials do this routinely, are applauded. Yes, oh, I know, there is Me Too. I'm not saying that it hasn't impacted. But I worked in the Assembly in the 80s. There was a guy there, and Alan knows who I'm talking about, Mark Allen Siegel.
I ever remember that.
Right, who went after anything in a skirt. You know, it's still going on, and there's the wink and the nod for the guys who do this. But God forbid a woman should act on her sexuality, and she's thrown out of office.
Yeah,
she ran as the first openly bisexual. I think she trivialized it, and I'm glad that she's being punished. But you are right.
Are you kidding me?
How come men are not also being punished?
Are you kidding me? You're glad she's being punished because she actually...
Lack of judgment. I'd never vote for her after this behavior. Crazy.
What about the men who do it?
Okay. Same thing.
But
that's the problem, is that the men don't get it.
Okay, but a lot of men did get it. A lot of men, Conyers, who passed away, got it. There are a lot of senators and House members who are no longer in their positions because of similar
issues. How many terms did Conyers serve before he got it? And it's not even her first term. The punishment is deserved, but it has to go to both sexes.
I think it's really important, a couple of distinctions. So I'm going to disagree on some points that I think are really important here. One is that we're talking about consensual relationships in the Katie Hill context, which are which is not the case in the Me Too.
Well, let her finish.
She has to clarify, Alan, and I can talk to her, too.
Well, with the exception of the complication is that there's a violation of the House Rules Ethics, which are put in place to protect employees, right? And that's legitimate.
Subordinates, right?
Because the idea is, if you are working for someone, it is inherently not consensual.
Correct.
But there's a big, huge chasm of a difference between when we're looking at what has happened in the Me Too movement with age disparities, with hierarchy disparities, with the level of consent. Non-consensual relationships at all versus a consensual relationship which violated an ethical code, and the ethical code only applies to this more recent situation. So I think we just need to be a little bit more careful when we're talking about these types of cases for everyone involved in any context.
I am sorry. She did no favor for bisexuals or for women in Congress. She showed incredible lack of judgment. Have your sex outside of your office. That's all I'm saying.
Also, maybe not take a picture when you're undressed and holding a bong in your hand.
You think?
I didn't look at the picture because another aspect of this is that her ex-husband is really seeing all of this information.
Right.
It's not like she posted it on Facebook.
Right.
She married
and they're going through a bitter
she
divorce.
Knew what was going on.
Not necessarily. How many
Sorry,
of us?
Holding men responsible does not mean letting women off the hook. We're all equally responsible.
Nobody's saying to let anybody off the hook. It's just the notion that men can do this and go on and on and on, and it takes a long time for them to get it and to get thrown out of office. She's first term, and she's now resigning because of the pressure, because she's seen as a slut.
Well, also
it's
because
just
she
that
did
simple.
It, right? Mm-hmm. Also, she because she did it, she wouldn't be resigning now if she had not been violative of the rules.
Yeah, I mean, but men don't resign immediately when they get found
some
out
do.
About. No,
some
they
do.
Should.
No.
They
we
should.
Saw a certain senator from Minnesota do it.
He
I
didn't.
Mean, he was out
no.
of there in no,
no.
time.
No,
that's why Gillibrand had
seven
a,
arguments.
Right.
Seven women came forward.
Yeah.
Only two for Katie Hill. I think they all should go. Come on.
So seven versus two.
Everybody
is the issue,
if you can't control your sex life to do the business of the country, don't go to Congress. It's easy.
I am so
I told
glad
you this would be a good
story.
Topic.
Well, I can tell you that I worked as an intern many years ago in Congress, and it was going on. And of course, as Libby points out, we were all working in the legislature, and we saw that that happening now. The question is, have things changed, and are people now aware that this is not something you should be doing?
I mean, I certainly understand your point, the points being made here of and certainly Libby's point. But by the same token, if she knew that more was coming out and more was damaging and she wants to pull the ripcord and get out before more comes out about her life, I don't know. Is that a bad move?
Say that again.
Well,
if she knows more's coming down the pike, uh-huh. and if she knows that there are other pictures and other things that could come out, it was her decision to resign and to say, okay, enough.
Yeah, well, yes, and I understand that, because why put yourself through that?
That's all I'm saying. Right. I mean, that's a part of this, right?
Yes, it probably is a part of this.
Well, you don't
but
know.
But it's also the. I mean, this is being done by her ex-husband.
Right.
And we can't overlook that. This is being done as part of a horrible, acrimonious divorce proceeding.
Well, wait a second. But if it's being done, you know, I've always told my students, and I'm sure you all have as teachers, that what's important is the truth. So
yes.
if there's a divorce going on, and the person who is making the accusations is somebody who has been hurt or is just a jerk, the question comes down to, are they lying or is it true? And if it's true, The fact that he's a jerk doesn't mitigate anything, does it?
I mean, she still admitted it. I mean, she admitted it, right? She did admit to the affair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, only one affair.
Oh, the only one affair?
She says she was not having anything with her staffer in her office now.
Okay. We have 1 minute. I just want to get to a couple of letters, we go to Charles, who says, 3 children killed in spite of who his father was. Certainly Trump totally missed this, as is to be expected by one who is so emotionally underdeveloped. And also, this is about the discussion last week on Turkey. I was in Paris for 10 days around the time when Trump caved in on the demands of Turkey. The international news did report on air that Trump had 139 business interests and 2 Trump towers in Istanbul, a subject that we also made note of on this program. My thanks to all of you for your letters. Thanks to Alan and Sarah and Rosemary and Libby. Thank you very much. Be well.
Thank you. We'll see you
tomorrow. Be back after this short break.